today how a US city with one of the worst reputations for police violence is leading the way to radical change. The weekend following the killing of George Floyd at the hands of the police saw widespread protests across the United States. It was perhaps no surprise that one of the places protesters gathered was in Newark, New Jersey, a city with a dark history of police brutality.
Stop police brutality!
So these thousands of people start chanting and marching, and they make their way to the first precinct, and at times it gets really tense.
Particularly tense, perhaps, because of where the crowd had stopped, by a plaque commemorating what had happened in Newark in 1967, when the police beating of a black taxi driver ignited 5 days of deadly protests, in which officers responded with live fire. In total, 26 people were killed.
When they think of riots, they think of Newark. Detroit happened 2 weeks after.
Anger about policing in Newark only intensified in the decades that followed. And that has not been forgotten today.
There was so much rage and so much anger, especially at the onset of these protests, that anything could just instigate something happening. But the interesting thing about Newark is there was a really concerted effort to make sure that these protests just didn't get violent, even if they were angry. Nothing was really damaged, and nobody was arrested. And that's something a lot of the residents I spoke to and activists were very proud of.
Why is it when in some cities, police responded to protesters with aggression and at times extreme force, Newark remained calm? Could it be significant reforms to policing that some say mirror radical ideas being put forward by campaigners? From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, rethinking the police. What can America learn from Newark? Ankita Rao, you've just been to Newark to report on this for Guardian US. It seems to me that what happened in 1967 cast a shadow over policing in the city that carried on for decades to come.
Exactly. So this is a precipitating event in a lot of ways.
I mean, I think it was the event that shaped my life.
I met someone named Larry Ham, who is a longtime activist in Newark. He was a child when these protests happened.
After the rebellion broke out, that all changed. It was like our political awakening, or my political awakening.
And this became the center of his life. So Larry actually started his organization, People's Organization for Progress, in 1982. And his purpose was to speak for the people and the safety of the black community in Newark.
Majority black cities or majority black communities, and they were patrolled by nearly all white police forces.
Police are arresting and killing people right and left for a lot of times petty crimes.
And abusing people, violating people's constitutional rights.
And Larry is seeing this. He's part of this community. His own family members and friends are brutalized. And he starts to be as vocal as possible.
Frequent protests and police brutality almost on a weekly basis for the past.
In her reporting in Newark, Ankita kept coming across people like Larry Ham, campaigners driven by their own experiences of unjust policing. His weekly protests that began in the 80s snowballed into pressure from the American Civil Liberties Union that finally forced the Department of Justice to step in.
The Justice Department investigation of Newark police seems to amount to quite an indictment of the police department when it comes to excessive force and stop and frisk and reviewing and training officers.
Newark ends up entering this consent decree contract with the Justice Department, which outlines a lot of ways that police need to be managing their forces in the city.
The report calls for major reforms, including a monitor of the department, an early warning.
Anything from exactly what does it mean to be a community police force? What kind of use of force is appropriate?
The Justice Department Civil Rights Division says the Newark Police Department needs a major overhaul.
So this consent decree lands in Newark and is implemented in 2014, just as the new mayor, Ross Baraka, is elected.
And we have a lot of work to do. So after you finish celebrating today, I want you to roll your sleeves up and get ready to be the mayor.
I've watched videos of Ross Baraka speaking, and he's clearly incredibly passionate about this. Again, partly because of his own experience. Tell me about him.
So when you speak to Ross Baraka, you get the sense that he's a lot more comfortable being an activist than a politician.
City first. A mayor that never forgets how he got here. Yeah. We need a mayor that's radical.
And a lot of this is because of the family he's from. His father and mother were both activists. His father, Amir Baraka, was a radical poet, well known in the community, who experienced police brutality himself.
Responsible for this violence, for this rebellion, is the inability of the city government to feel, as human beings, the plights of the majority of the people in this city.
During the uprising in Newark, his father was arrested and assaulted, and this is the sort of foundation that Ross Baraka has when he's growing up. He spends many years as an activist. By the time he runs for mayor, he has made police reform one of his key platforms for the city.
Newark is a world away from 1967 in some places, and in some instances, we're still there. Emotionally, I think there are a lot of folks still in 1967 because we have not really grappled with that. We have not dealt with it.
So what was he promising to do? What reforms did he start to make?
So as soon as Baraka is elected, he gets to work. He starts establishing this independent citizen review board, which basically allows community members and other groups to be part of investigating police violence. And almost as soon as he creates that, the police union, which is extremely strong, sues the city for trying to implement this. And that's a case that is still being discussed in the state Supreme Court. He pushes the police department to recruit more Black and brown cops.
Right. So now you have people of color or the majority population here in authority and power. Right. So
and the police force until then was still largely white. And also, I think a sticking point is that they didn't live in Newark. They did not know the streets of Newark. He was really pushing them to become a community police force that actually understood the community.
Put your police force in places where people can see them other than the relationship that they have of cop and criminal. The police showing up when somebody do something bad, you have the police present when things are okay.
He starts to give funding to community organizations that are related to public safety, but not the police, because his thing is we should be demilitarizing our police to the greatest extent. Their power should be solely based on the job that they should do, not that social workers should do or that other mediators should do. And he puts that into action. And in many ways, this is part of what you'll hear protesters calling for when they say defund the police. They're saying, why should we be spending millions and millions of dollars on police for doing work that they're not actually meant to do? Why isn't this money put into education? Why isn't this money put into all these other social services that we really need in cities like Newark?
That's so interesting, because I think when we hear the phrase defund the police, certainly here in the UK, that sounds very extreme, like you're saying you should dismantle the police force. But it sounds like what you're saying is there's a spectrum, and that includes ideas like this, taking some funds from the police and placing them elsewhere. But hasn't Ross Baraka push back against the language being used against the phrase defund the police?
Yeah, I think like a lot of phrases, something like the words defund the police has become incredibly politicized and reductive. And I do want to say there are some people who actually just want to defund the police entirely or abolish the police. In this case, you know, Raz Baraka recently called this concept a sort of bourgeois idea. And I think that's because what he told me about the fact that we need police in these communities. There are grandmothers who call him up and say, all this stuff is happening on my street. I haven't seen your cops around here for days. And so his vision is a little bit different, but in some ways fits right into this argument of defund the police. So last week, he also decided to move 5% of the police budget into anti-violence work that was not under the police department. He also, you know, completely moved an actual physical police precinct, the first precinct. He decided to make it a museum. And he wants to make it an anti-violence museum that tells the history of this city that has gone through these battles with its law enforcement and also houses this anti-violence initiative that he's looking at.
Coming up, how the Newark mayor turned to a man who had brokered a peace deal between LA's most notorious gangs for help. And Keaton, one of the things you saw was the Newark Community Street Team. What is that?
I think one of the most interesting parts to me as I reported the story was Baraka reached out, you know, straight across the country and invited somebody named Akila Shirelles to the city to implement some non-police public safety work. And Akila is, to me, one of the most sort of powerful people that I met.
Tell me about him.
Akila's sort of, he's tall, he's got broad shoulders, sort of strong physique, very, very animated eyes. I think somebody that almost looks like a law enforcement to me, but was kind of the opposite.
You know, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking too.
He's based in this sort of dusty carriage house right next to this old police precinct. During these sort of strange times, we sat across the rooms, we're wearing masks, but he's so passionate that he could hardly keep his mask on when he was talking because he wanted to make his points really clear.
And again, you were talking to someone on the forefront of efforts to overhaul the ways in which communities are policed, who himself had a fascinating backstory. Tell me about that.
So Akila grew up in Watts, which is a neighborhood in Los Angeles that was known for gang violence. And he grew up in that community, sometimes participating in that.
There's talk of a truce in a war some thought might never end. LA's warring gangs. Bloods and Crips, some 100.
If you remember the Crips and the Bloods, which are sort of these really well-known gangs in Los Angeles, that, you know, that's how Akila grew up. He and his brother decided that they needed to do something about this. And so they sort of stepped out of their roles, you know, within that community and decided to help make a peace treaty between these two gangs in Los Angeles. And they were well known for that. And that's not an easy task, not only because, you know, these are gangs that have long histories and vast networks, but also because when you're inside of a community, it's very hard for anybody to listen to you. 15 years ago, his own son is killed, his son Tyrell.
He went to a party in an affluent black neighborhood on the west side of Los Angeles and was shot to death at the party. I mean, I'm no novice to violence and death. I done witnessed it all my life. But nothing ever prepares you for the loss of your child.
he's stuck in this strange position because when a kid like that is killed, a lot of his friends want to avenge his death. And knowing how these communities work, Akila sticks to his guns and he says, I'm a peacemaker. My whole goal here is to stop people shooting each other. I have to make sure nobody avenges my son's death. And that sort of informs the way that he starts working on these at a bigger and bigger city scale.
You know, historic, like, kind of oppression and racism and structural violence has just been allowed to fester and to ripple.
So what does that experience lead him to? How does it mold his views on the best way to keep communities safe? Tell me about what he does in Newark.
So the model that Akila implements, in Newark it's called the Newark Street Team, but he has this sort of 50-person organization where all the members are recruited from within the community. So these are people who might have formerly been in gangs themselves. They're trained to answer distressed phone calls. They're embedded in the city's hospitals for when gunshot victims or assault victims come to the hospital. They're embedded in the city's schools. They're unarmed, but are meant to get to the social dynamics between people that causes violence and be a sort of watchdog for the communities.
We operate, through the public health lens. We believe that, violence is a public health issue. And we believe that that one of the primary reasons why there's been so much violence in neighborhoods like the South and the West Ward in the city of Newark, there's been a lack of investment in people and in infrastructure in these communities since the 67 Rebellion.
How's this funded?
So the Newark Street Team is partly funded from the city itself. Raz Baraka gave them a grant to run and train all of these people that they work with, who I also want to say it's been proven that fewer people are killed. Even the police department chief that I spoke to said fewer people are killed because the Newark Street Team exists.
Well, I think there's no question that the Newark Community Street Team does an amazing job and that their work has, without question, saved lives.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the mayor doesn't believe in defund the police in an extreme way, and politically he may not like the language, but in practice, even before any of these recent protests, he was putting into place some of the types of progressive reforms that campaigners are talking about. And arguably, it all adds up to a fairly radical shakeup of policing. You've got the Citizen Review Board, you've got a shift in recruitment, and you've got funds being diverted into different ways to keep communities safe. So the next question is it having results?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting to dig into what means progress when it comes to policing. Newark is seeing some of the lowest crime rates it has seen in 50 years. Crime rates are a lot more complicated than that, and gun violence is a lot more complicated than that. But that could be one example. Newark also tracks use of force. So, not just how many come from within the department, but how many times civilians complain about police using excessive force against them. And that's something that is by no means at zero, but has also gone down. Compared to 10 years ago, yes, fewer Black people are being killed by Newark police. So, these are notes of progress. And I think that the people that I spoke to in Newark, one thing that most of them have said is that, look, the city is far from perfect. We have a long way to go, but at least we're part of the conversation. And I think, from people like Larry Hamm to having a mayor that sort of doesn't dance around this topic, to having someone like Akila, like, you have so many of these different people who say, like, this is getting better. So beyond the sort of crime metrics and that kind of thing, I think that speaks volumes too.
And I guess, to be optimistic about it, it's a long way from 1967. But are there still incidents that are very worrying for the community in Newark?
Yes. I mean, this is not by any means gone. Just last year, a man was killed by police, just for another small traffic violation. And I think maybe one of the big differences is that there was immediate action taken. But this is still something people see. There are still dozens of excessive use of force cases cropping up. By no means is this gone, and by no means has Newark healed from, you know, many years of this taking a toll on their communities.
Earlier, you mentioned the Supreme Court challenge, suggesting that there has been resistance from the police unions. Is that a problem?
The police union is strong. They are clearly fighting an independent citizen review board. But when you talk to people like Brian O'Hara, who, you know, is in charge of implementing the consent decree in the police department in Newark, he, at least when we talked, was not against the citizen review board. He was not against investigating police use of force activities. He says that, you know, we are under an obligation to follow the rules that have been set here in the consent decree. And so whatever it takes to do that, I'll let the law decide and I'll work on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've done well implementing, you know, all of the major issues that gave rise to the consent decree in Newark. And if you just kind of flip through Newark's consent decree, I think you'll see that a lot of the areas, you know, the headings that you read through are all of the things that people talk about as being wrong with policing in the United States today.
That sort of feeling that this is the people in charge of Newark right now came from the same grassroots activism of the people who, you know, were in direct opposition to the leadership is how Larry thinks of what's happening at the moment. And he's out there, you know, every week and saying the names of people killed. And he's saying people are at the table now and people are listening and there are people fighting for the community. And I think that is drastically different than what happened, you know, two decades ago.
Okay, so clearly in 2020, there are problems. You mentioned a terrible incident of police brutality last year. Larry's still out there protesting every week about injustice. But you also began by pointing out that the protests in Newark in the wake of George Floyd's death didn't turn violent in the way they had elsewhere. Do you think that represents something optimistic in the city?
I think so. I think that, you know, here in New York where I live, I had to go through police barricades for, I think, 2 weeks to get into my building. There were police wearing riot gear every time protesters show up, even if it was just 20 or 30 protesters, and they would follow them. And it felt like we were in some way under siege during the protests. And Newark is not like that. There's everyone from young people to the mayor to city council to police protesting together. And it's not necessarily rainbows, but that's something that is a testament to all of the work that has been done for so many years to lead up to this point.
Ankita, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
That was Ankita Rao. Do read her piece about how different cities have responded to all of this at theguardian.com. That's it for today. My thanks to Ankita. This episode was produced by Serena Barker-Singh. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.